For over 20 years, your locally owned Papa John's has been delivering pizza to your doorstep. With today's climate, they are diligently working every day to provide safe food delivery to their Eugene community. It's why Papa John's introduced the no-contact delivery system. Download their app, select Leave at My Door, and your pizza will arrive at your door with no contact from the driver. Payment and tip are already handled when you place the order in the app online. Their team is working hard for you. No contact delivery. PapaJohns.com.
Take KUJZ 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go at 95.3thescore.com.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Hope die. All right, welcome to Sports Talk. The 4 o'clock hour has arrived, and we'll just watch Jack win the 86 Masters, then get interviewed by Brent Musburger back then Scott Van Pelt just now. I had the sound down and like a putz, I'm sitting there actually watching a silent screen, which has now morphed to San Antonio, Miami. NBA Finals, Spurs up 3-2. So that's where we're at. We thank you for joining us. We started a conversation last hour based on an email from a listener, and I am quite appreciative of that because you guys chimed in with some good stuff, just impactful rule changes for all of the sports we follow. Some of you talked from tennis to soccer to golf. And I'll tell you what has been a very good rule and has, I mean, it's not like the NFL needed to generate more attention or more fans. It is the most popular sport in our country. But moving the extra point back from pretty much automatic. I mean, you know, you had blocks and maybe some shanks and some bad snaps or bad holds, but kickers didn't miss extra points, really. Now you see guys, you know, hey, people miss 30-yard field goals all the time. So that really added. I mean, it used to be 21-14, 22 seconds to go, fourth down on the 2-yard line, quarterback rolls out, finds a tight end in the end zone, touchdown, it's tied. You started thinking about overtime. Now it's like, huh, who's their kicker? How many extra points has he missed? I think it's added a really, really good element to the game. Somebody said the replay system in tennis, I like to call it the McEnroe rule, because I'm sure the umpires were just like, just anything to shut this guy up, although it came after he played. Somebody on Twitter just said, and I think Nick may have brought it up yesterday, about the tradition of the Wednesday before the Masters starts, the winner from the previous year designs the menu. Was that you yesterday? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that was something I learned about. I think it was somebody talked about like what like Phil Mickelson had one year for his Masters dinner, or like somebody brought up like, oh yeah, Phil gave me some weird stuff one year, and then everybody was like, why is Phil giving everybody dinner? And like, oh well, the night before the start of the Masters, everybody gets to get to dinner, and they have a big old shindig thing going on, and so that's kind of what they did. I don't know necessarily when it started, and I'm sure people probably knew about it for a lot longer, but there have been people that just like, we're just going to have Waffle House, or somebody's, you know, bringing in like a 7-course meal or whatever. It's literally whatever the champ wants to eat, the champ gets to eat.
There was also one little controversy surrounding the Masters dinner 1 year. So Fuzzy Zeller, who I think is the only rookie ever to win the Masters, he won back in 79. And, of course, all the champions go back. So you fast forward to 1997, Tiger wins. So now we're at the 98 Masters. And Fuzzy Zeller, in front of a news crew, says, "Tell Tiger Woods not to serve fried chicken or collard greens." And people are like, and he called him a little boy. Oh, my God. You could imagine, even for the 90s. I mean, now Twitter would have exploded and everybody would have been like, dude, really? But I was thinking, people are now kicking around, what would your Masters dinner be? I would probably piss people off because I don't eat meat so much. How about this? In my meat and potatoes days, well, I still eat potatoes. I always liked a nice bloody prime rib. That was probably my favorite. And I probably would have gone baked potato. And I'm trying to think, maybe asparagus on the side. But I would have to season it with my olive oil and my 21-gun salute and a little bit of garlic powder. So that was pre-2015 me. Since I just have to go lasagna with my wife's special salad. She gets the baby greens mix. She crumbles up walnuts. She has feta cheese, and she slices red onion and mixes it in with her raspberry vinaigrette. That's one of the best salads. And I don't know if I have to go dessert or if I just should also. So my wife basically would be cooking this. I'd make the lasagna. She's making her salad. And she does this homemade cheesy garlic bread made from scratch. I'm talking cutting the garlic up, the butter, the bread, the cheese. Oh, it's really good. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Man, I am so hungry right now. And there's a pizza commercial on TV. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Hit us up via the text line, 3210824. Try us on Twitter at 953thescore for the station. For Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. For me, it's at Sports Talk 953. All right, let's bring in Jersey Jack. How you doing, Jack?
All right, so I'll be over about 7:30 for dinner. your wife's cooking?
Well, that's good. If I win the Masters. I would say that's if I win the Masters.
Oh, okay. So, did you mention what Tiger had this year? What he proposed for dinner?
No, I saw a photo of sashimi,
and then steak and chicken fajitas, which is the same thing he had in 97.
Really? I see sushi and that stuff makes me want to puke.
Well, but see, he had the fajitas kind of for the meat eaters.
I could do that. I could do that. I mean, in the day. I'd like to.
So he gave people an option. But, you know, there are a lot of people who love sushi, man.
I know. And I can't eat with them. I mean, it's not a matter of I don't prefer it. It borderline ignites my gag reflex.
Wow.
Tuna fish, too. I've eaten crab. I really don't like that. Clams.
What you're saying
shrimp.
Is you have fear. You have a fear of sushi.
Yeah. Oh, no. I would run like a 4.240 to get away from that stuff.
Hey, did you happen to see Wilson, the dog that I mentioned?
Wilson, the dog?
I texted you.
I was confused because I also have a to-do list for you for some music I have to listen to that I haven't gotten to yet.
You told me the wine was flowing last night, and, you know, you'd get back to me. So I wasn't going to bring it up. I figured you'd listen when you listen.
I will. I will.
But yeah, there's adoptapet.com, and this morning they had this German Shepherd pup up in Corvallis named Wilson. I'm going, Wilson? And I'm going, Steve's got it because it looks just like your dog. It's amazing. I know they've come out with a new posting this afternoon, but it was from like 3 o'clock this morning that I saw it. So if you check it out, because it looks like your dog,
I will.
All right, bro.
Thanks.
I'll let you go.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. All right, folks. Every once in a while, we get a game-changing text. Somebody is just thinking above and beyond the call of duty. So we were talking about Tiger. We were talking about the history. We were talking about if you won the Masters, what would be the dinner that you had served for everyone? And you would assume that in most cases, it would be your favorite meal. So the text is, would your Masters dinner be the same as your last meal if you were on death row? I don't know, man. I'm going to have to rethink everything I've ever thought before in the history of my life.
Now,
because what?
Well, now I'm thinking the other way to go with it. It's not food that you really like. It's food that of somebody that you dislike. It's food that they don't like. So if Tiger's just like he really doesn't like what Bruce Kupp has been doing, just, you know, playing golf to win Masters. He's not winning regular tournaments. He finds out Bruce Kupp, he doesn't like mac and cheese. Tiger's going to have mac and cheese. He's going to have cauliflower mac and cheese, lobster mac and cheese. He's going to have some sort of mac and cheese ice cream involved. Like, just you start serving food that somebody doesn't like just to really piss them off. Or somebody's gunning for you and they're on a hot streak, just to give them something that maybe upsets the tummy a little bit. Just really kind of throw everybody off their game.
That's an interesting one. So you're saying that spite is being performed during the planning of the meal?
I'm saying it's not the only thing, but it's a possibility. You know, if it depending on what's going on, maybe, you know, with the pandemic and everything, you kind of want to keep everybody happy, so you serve up maybe just some really good pizza and wings and some beer and, you know, side salad or whatever. So you keep it simple, you keep it really kind of homey, or you go with like a big pasta bake, so it just kind of feels like home and it's got that the home style food going on. But maybe in a different year, in a previous year, somebody's trying to get it up a little extra edge, and they know that somebody that's, you know, on a hot streak is kind of doing a little too well, but they don't like food that's got jalapenos in it, so you order tacos with extra jalapenos. Just like, sorry, this is just kind of what we have to deal with here. So unfortunate, you're gonna have an upset tummy and you're not gonna feel good going into the match. Gotta be in the right mindset here.
Yeah, I like the way you think, except I'd rather just go with something I like and hopefully everybody else likes.
That's the nicer way to go about it, sure.
All right. Man, I'm getting bombarded with so many good questions here. People are still on our game changers. And by the way, does it like you get three items and then you have to have dessert? I mean, how limited are you? So anyway, but along the lines of game changers, this really is not a rule change, but in the mid-1960s, a guy by the name of Pete Gogolak, whose family escaped from behind the Iron Curtain, I think they were East German, signed with the Buffalo Bills of the AFL, and he was the first soccer-style kicker. And, you know, there hasn't been a straight-on kicker since maybe Mark Moseley of Washington. We're talking like 30 years. Now, that's a substantial game changer because from that moment, I mean, the kickers just started getting longer and longer. And sadly enough, over the weekend, Tom Dempsey, who set the record in 1970 with a 63-yard field goal that stood until relatively recently, was a straight-on kicker. Could you imagine kicking the ball straight on? Plus, he had half a foot because of a birth defect. And then it was just a few guys tied it. I forgot who just broke the record and how long ago it was. Okay, Matt Prater, December 8th, 2013. 64 yards. The 63-yarders, Tom Dempsey, Jason Elam of Denver in 1998, the year they won a Super Bowl. Sebastian Janikowski of the Raiders, 2012. David Akers the next year. Graham Gano, I don't you know, 2018. And Brett Maher this past year, a 63-yarder, huh? You would have thought that would have resonated with somebody who, you know, follows NFL football pretty closely. Okay. And by the way, Dempsey died because of the coronavirus. So, I mean, he wasn't that old. He was only about 73 years old. And, you know, you talk about breaking records. So Phil Esposito had the record for most goals, 76. Gretzky scored 92. So when Dempsey kicked the 63-yarder, the record was 56. I mean, that kind of kicks its ass. That's pretty substantial. I mean, I guess when McGuire juiced his way to 70 bombs, that beat Maris's record by 9. That's pretty substantial. So, yeah, you want to talk about taking a record in Shadoobie. Shattered. All right, 284-8571, your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. Yeah, some of the other rule changes I mentioned, and somebody texted in. Yeah, the designated hitter is pretty substantial. And I know a lot of people are not fans of it. And I know some people still to this day that some of you will contact me and be like, no, I'll claim, so you watch it? No, I'm a National League guy. I'm like, still? Really? Okay, that's holding on, considering it was at the start of the 1973 season that Ron Bloomberg of the Yankees was the first DH, and in his first at-bat, he walked. And I learned that the Pacific League and the Japanese League adopted it in 1975. But when you do these deep dives, you learn the background. So the guy who set the record for the most years managing in baseball was Cornelius McGillicuddy, better known as Connie Mack, who managed from 1894 through 1950. He took over he managed the Pittsburgh Pirates for 3 years. Then this new league formed in 1900. And in 1901, he took over the Philadelphia Athletics and managed them through and including the 1950 season. And I was reading around the turn of the century from the 1900s to the 1900s, the 1890s to the 1900s, he suggested a designated hitter. Think about that. 70-some-odd years, or around 70 years, before it actually became a reality. I had never heard that story. So, yeah, I found that pretty interesting. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody, I don't know this is a rule more than a law because it went through the Supreme Court. Free agency in every sport, especially baseball, was a complete game changer. I mean, with the salary cap, free agency is substantial in the NBA as well as the NFL and the NHL. But the decision in 1974 to kind of alter the face of baseball, and the owners fought it obviously tooth and nail with Dave McNally and Andy Messersmith to be able to, you know, go to the highest bidder because owners were pretty much tyrants. I mean, the greatest players in the world would, during the offseason, get a contract mailed to them. And let me tell you something. For those who are of a little older age and familiar with the Los Angeles Dodgers, about 4 or 5 years into their since they relocated from Brooklyn to L.A., Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale, their big 1-2 punch, held out together. And let me tell you something. The fans did not side with the players, you know, forever going back. I mean, you hear stories from baseball managers in the early 1900s over labor strife talking about these spoiled players who get to get paid to play a game. That has not taken root. Now I think there's more of a tendency to look at the owners because they – and billionaires versus millionaires, if you understand finances, that's a different world. And but free agency and, of course, it coincided. So Steinbrenner buys the Yankees from CBS in 1973 and free agency takes root in 74 and he in turn signed Catfish Hunter – than Reggie Jackson, and you know, he went plum loco. He really was responsible for the coining of the term "buy a championship." Then he got carried away with it and actually ended up in the 80s, later 80s, up through 90, ruining the franchise because of stupid free agent deals, thinking every problem could be solved with a major contract signing. All right, but yeah, free agency is on the list, but it's an impactor, but not a rule change. It's more of a – it was a legal challenge of the reserve clause through the courts. There's another one, expanding the big dance to 64 teams. That was after Georgetown beat Houston in 84. And for the 85 March Madness, that was the first time we had – a 1 through 16 and 4 brackets when it would come down to Villanova upsetting Georgetown. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have an update. And we'll bring in a fresh voice. Look forward to talking with our buddy Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. Next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
He wasn't someone that would openly say he loves you and all that kind of stuff. So words were sometimes hard for him. But at that moment, there were like 1,000 of those type words that were flying back and forth. So that's one of them. Celebrating with my kids in the middle of the game. Talking to the whole California Angels roster. Had a special moment with Rod Carew. But I couldn't tell you what we said. But I remember leaving there thinking, man, that was cool.
what times we live in. That was, I need to pay attention, Cal Ripken. And we were having another conversation over the weekend about just when you look at how many games in a row he played. I mean, there's no chance that anybody's going to get within like a tenth of that, are they? I mean, nobody plays a full season anymore at 162. Now they're going to get to 2,700. Yeah, I'll meet you there. All right, 284-8571. I don't know why I'm giving the phone number out. It's because I want to pay homage to our friends at the at Oregon Fuel Injection for all your diesel needs since 1974. Online, OregonFuelInjection.com. Hey, some really good suggestions for eternal rule changes that have impacted the game. Somebody mentioned the shift in baseball, which is kind of interesting. Because it was first implemented by the Cleveland Indians manager Lou Boudreau to try and slow down Ted Williams. Then hardly anybody used it, and then it came back recently. But anyway, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. catch up with our buddy from the Pac-12 Network, always repping the 201 along with the Bronx on Twitter. Use the handle at @Mike_Yam. Michael, how are you doing during these most unique times?
You know, I'm glad you bring up the 201 because I think everyone in this country has been sort of fixated on COVID-19, and we've all seen the news about New York City, and obviously you and I have the Jersey ties, and New Jersey's been hit pretty hard, and I grew up just outside of New York City, so my dad works at a hospital, so he's driving into Manhattan every single day in Queens. Luckily, everyone is still healthy, and I hope everyone that's listening right now to your show, and obviously you as well, Steve, I hope you're healthy as well, and your family too.
Yeah, I last week, once we were able to get my producer back in studio, I now have a makeshift studio in my spare room in my home, Mike. So my dogs and wife are outside. I'm locked away in a room talking to you. You got to love technology.
I will take it. I will definitely take that. I felt for you because I follow you on Twitter, obviously. And you know, the other week, you said the phone lines were down, and I'm thinking to myself, my Lord, man, you should get double pay for going in through no guests. And, you know, this is where, you know, great radio show hosts like yourself, that's kind of where you make your money, right? I mean, it's about getting creative and, you know, still being entertaining.
Well, we get paid on the 15th. I'll let you know if there's a bonus in there. But
I won't hold my breath. I know what the industry is like right now. I get it.
Oh, man. So I wanted to get in late February, you shared a really personal story before the world went into lockdown. Your grandfather, who, as you wrote, was from the other side of the world and kind of risked life and limb to seek a better life. What could you tell us about your grandpa and this just incredible journey?
Yeah, well, number one, I really appreciate you even bringing me on to even talk about this. You know, I was on the fence even about writing it, and you know, I think some people took it as a political piece, and it wasn't really my intent at all. I just wanted people to have empathy. And, you know, over the last couple of years or so, as you watch the news and you see that parents are getting separated from their kids, man, it was affecting me. It was breaking my heart. And, you know, I know the perception, look, there's a lot of really bad people on this planet. There's some amazing people as well. And, you know, for me, just knowing kind of the background, and it was, you know, look, I'm half Chinese, half Italian. And, you know, my grandfather, my dad's side of the family, who's Chinese, you know, they're from Hong Kong, and it was a bad situation. They were poor, really poor. And my grandfather got a job as a sailor and knew a ship was going to be heading to the United States and got off the boat, and he just didn't get back on it. And, you know, he was able to save money, he got an attorney, he was able to get citizenship, but he was separated from, you know, my grandmother, you know, my aunts and my uncles, and obviously my dad as well for about 10 years. And he saved money and finally was able to get citizenship for my dad and his family, and brought him out to New York. And you know, I know the story should resonate with a lot of people who have also had similar situations. And I watched this news coverage, Steve, and for me, it was just, it's heartbreaking just because people want a better life. And at the end of the day, I know how lucky I am. I know, you know, we live in this awesome country, and obviously we're going through a tough time, but by and large, we're given so many great opportunities. And you know, I hope just everyone values sort of what we have every single day, because not everyone in other places that are just not great environments, you know, they don't have those same luxuries.
Yeah, you know, one of the aspects of the story that kind of jumped off the page to me is had to do with your grandmother. So you growing up in the Bronx, what do you remember about her and that part of the story where she actually gets to make a personal plea to Bobby Kennedy, who at the time was the Attorney General of the United States?
Yeah, you know what actually started? Like, I didn't know. I mean, I knew obviously about my grandfather in the past and my grandmother, who was, you know, had the biggest heart of anyone, right? You know, just it was wild to me. You know, basically like a year and a half ago, I had gotten these like text messages from one of my cousins, and I guess, you know, she was at my uncle's house and kind of going through shoe boxes and kind of the attic and whatnot, and came across these documents. And you know, my grandparents did not speak English, and yeah, someone for them, my grandmother and my grandfather in English, wrote to Robert Kennedy. and was basically pleading that, you know, my grandmother had sort of pleaded in the letter to Kennedy, just saying, hey, like, you know, my husband's out there, who was my grandfather, and you know, is there any way to just kind of keep him there? It was a desperate situation.
Right.
In Hong Kong form, and just was kind of hoping he could stay to save some money and make his way back. And obviously things worked out positively, but I was shocked. I mean, this growing up as a kid, you know, like I said, my grandmother didn't speak, you know, English. So to see this letter, and it obviously wasn't, you know, it was broken English, but it was still good enough to convey the points. And I sort of copied and pasted, you know, that it's in the article that I wrote, a couple of those letters, but there was a few of them, and my grandfather had written a couple as well. And it was eye opening in a lot of ways. If you just sort of seen the desperation, and in some of the documents that I didn't post, it broke my heart, man. I was bawling. I just saw some of the things that they were writing and saying about their personal situation, and it was hard to see because I didn't have those memories of them. They were, you know, we were here. I was young, like we were, you know, in the Bronx, and, you know, we got to go and play and have a good time at the park. And, you know, I just didn't think, I knew the struggles. I heard the stories when I was a kid and as I grew up, but I didn't realize it was that situation was that desperate.
No, it and like you said, this isn't what you normally post. But folks, go to Mike's Twitter account, read the story. It's fantastic. Talking with Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. So I saw you got to work with Natalie Welch up at Linfield College.
Yes.
We've had her on the show. She is amazing. She teaches a sports management course. What could you tell us about connecting with her and the kind of experience it was, you know, speaking with the college students, you know, during a most unique time?
Oh, how cool is that? I didn't even know you guys knew her. Look, I had gotten the invite, and, you know, a couple of weeks ago when all this stuff was happening in the initial shelter in place, I have some friends that have kids, and my cousins with my nieces and nephews, and I know how hard it is on parents. So I just sort of posted on my Twitter. I was like, hey, if anyone wants to, you know, have me talk to their class about journalism, you know, happy to do it. And, you know, a few people reached out. I had talked to like a fifth grade class, a large group of eighth graders as well. You know, the college classes I've been doing over the years, in fact, every time I'm on one of our campuses, I try to make it a point to talk to a lot of our journalism students. And I've done it obviously at Oregon a couple times, and I love it. But yeah, they had reached out, and it was great. I mean, I got another one coming up this week with the kids down at ASU at Cronkite. It's one of my favorite things, because when I was at Fordham, you mentioned the Bronx, that's where I went to college, and we would have guest speakers come in, and I got so much out of it, not only from a networking perspective, but just sort of understanding the field and the path and how to navigate you know, potentially a career on air. So, you know, I get the kids are cute, right? Like, they're always like, who's your favorite athlete? Like, who, you know, how do you prep for your shows? Like, those are kind of the cooler questions from the younger ones. But, you know, as people get a little bit older, and certainly college age kids, you know, they're talking about reels. How do I construct one? You know, what makes them different? Like, how do you differentiate yourself? And, you know, those are the types of questions and topics we like to cover. And obviously, and you know, this is a guy that's been in the business for a long time. There is no set path for this man. You really got to just kind of carve your way and network and relationships and be willing to not really work for much money and the whole thing. There's a lot of sacrifice, but at the end of the day, man, there's nothing better than what we get to do.
Yeah, and someday we all hope to make Tony Romo money. We're working in media.
Oh, yes, I'll be up for that.
Mike, you know, a common theme that we've heard during this pandemic is how just time has been altered. And, you know, because in sports, there's a clock, there's a date, there's something to look forward to. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, because it was 4 weeks ago today. You were in Vegas for day one of the Pac-12 tournament. Is it me, or does that seem like another lifetime ago?
I'm honestly surprised it's 4 weeks. It really does. I was talking to Matt Muehlbach and Earl Watson actually this week, and they were on set with me, and I talked to Donnie Mack yesterday. You know, I can't even imagine what these student athletes are going through. It's a crazy time for everyone. You know, I say this as the guy that just gets to watch the games, and I don't get to play. But man, I mean, the disappointment. Vegas is my favorite thing that we do at Pac-12 Network. I mean, it is, it's awesome. I mean, it is, if you're a basketball fan, the games, the intensity, the build up for an entire season to get a payoff and to be in one place. And It's awesome. And to get the one day. And honestly, Steve, you know what was weird about it? Like, we had like the tinkle to Lucas, the game winner when Plummer goes for 35 for Utah and the Beavs, you know, we didn't get to see the Civil War again, you know, in Vegas to get a moment like that. But I mean, hell, on day one, it's the NCAA saying, hey, there's not going to be fans. A little bit later that day, Pac-12 had said, hey, we're not going to allow fans on day number two. Then the NBA canceled their season. Then I'm walking back to the hotel going, I don't know if we're going to be playing tomorrow. And then sure enough, in the morning, you know, the entire tournament gets canceled. It was, it does feel like a lifetime ago, man. And it just kind of makes me cherish, you know, those moments that we did have this past season.
Wow. A couple final thoughts for Mike Yam and the Pac-12 Network. I mean, you followed sports for a long time. Obviously, here in Eugene, we've been fortunate. I mean, we got to see Sabrina Ionescu in real time, in person. You know, I've seen her make people who might not have ever even thought about it all of a sudden become huge fans of the women's game. So, you know, with all the people you talk to, how unique or impactful has she been for a college athlete?
Game changer. She was the face of college basketball this past season, and I don't know if there's ever been a time, at least in my lifetime, where I would have said that about a female athlete in college. Like, that just hasn't been the case. You've had stars on the men's game, and maybe it's a function of not necessarily having like a Zion this year or one of those types of talents, but Sabrina's been a game changer. And, you know, I talked about how disappointed I was I didn't get the tournament. I mean, can you imagine being Sabrina? You come back for a senior campaign and you don't win a national championship. You don't even get that opportunity. I mean, she's got to feel cheated. But I think the beauty of it, and I've gotten to talk to Sabrina a bunch of times, she is as impressive a person as you will meet. I think we saw that on full display when she was down speaking at the memorial service for Kobe, and then later that day flying up to Stanford and balling out in that game. I mean, she's poised. Her teammates were terrific this year. I just saw kind of like a mock draft, and there's, you know, obviously with Ruthie and Satu and Sabrina, you're talking about, you know, three of the top players in this year's WNBA draft under Kelly Graves. It's really remarkable what he's done in a short period of time to build up that program. It's amazing.
Yeah, and of course, for selfish reasons, I'm going to have my New York Liberty jersey on back order she gets drafted.
Did you see that story, Steve? Like, she's deciding between Nike, Puma, and Under Armour. I'm like, I did like a triple take when I saw that.
Me too.
And I'm like, there's an actual decision here. Like, I would be, I mean, is that like not the biggest upset ever if it's not Nike? Like, that would shock me.
I don't think you would be alone. People like, wait, Oregon, Nike? I didn't even think this was a discussion, but I'd be curious to see how that plays out. Right, I got one last Duck thing.
Yeah.
Peyton Pritchard wins the Cousy Award, ends up a first-team All-American, Conference Player of the Year. I mean, we know he played and played pretty well as a freshman for a Final Four team, but he always seemed more solid. How great of a story, kind of just how uplifting is it to see a guy who works so hard end up to be this great of a player?
It's one of the best stories in college basketball. You know, speaking of Vegas, I'm going to think back, Don McLean, every year we go there, and the night before day one of the tournament, there's this huge staff production meeting, and kind of the bosses tend to just look to Don, and every single year they ask him just to give a quick little synopsis or some storylines in the tournament. He kind of is the elder statesman and our go-to guy in hoops. And this year, Don had said, you know, we've talked about Peyton Pritchard all season long, and rightfully so, but he said, we haven't talked about him enough. And Don's been in this league for years. And he said, I've never seen a story quite like this and a player having this type of impact the way he did. That's not a DeAndre Ayton type of one and done. He needed to be celebrated. I'm so happy for him that he was able to get that Cousy Award. He deserves it. I'm glad he was in the Player of the Year conversation nationally. He's going to go down as one of the all-time greats, obviously, in school history, and there's been some good ones, especially recently, but a remarkable career for a four-year player. Just kudos to him to grinding it out, and Dana Altman and that staff for plucking him out and making sure he was wearing that green uniform.
Great stuff. Mike, listen, I appreciate you finding some time. As you well know now, the value of content has never been higher. I appreciate you sharing. And again, folks, on Twitter at Mike_Yam, check out that personal story. That's his pinned tweet. It's awesome. Mike, thanks for taking some time with us. You and yours, wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully we'll catch up soon as we get back to normal.
Really appreciate the invite as always, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
All right. Have a good one, Mike.
Yeah, you too. Right. Take care.
All right. Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. Not only a terrific broadcaster and knowledgeable and polished, but classy, smart, one of the best guys you'll ever come across. All right. Before we take our final break of the 4 o'clock hour, shout out to our friends and from our friends at Big Al State Farm, who, you know, they understand what we're going through now. I mean, they're in the insurance business. I mean, come on. They know what folks in this community, how they're being impacted, some really hard times. And Big Al and the folks in his office are making sure the new normal feels a little more normal. They're working remotely for you. Times like these will highlight what really matters, and they want to make sure you're protected. So if you're unsure about your current plan, your coverage, call 686-1522. They're still there now. You could also drop them a text, 686-1522. They're reachable from Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Obviously, drop-ins is kind of a no-no. They're requiring their clients to make an appointment to meet at the office. They appreciate your patience. Online, BigAlEugene.com. Big Al State Farm, here to help life go right. All right, break time. We'll do that. We'll come back. Some good additions to the rule changes and how they impact the sports. Well, we love so much and now miss so much. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
But from what I read, that healthy people can fight this, the antibodies make it better. They're doing some blood transplants now with people that have already got the disease, that have gotten over it, that have had the antibodies that can fight it. So there's a lot of smart people that are going to figure this out. May 1's our goal. Don't know if it'll happen. Players come in soon after that.
That's Mike Gundy again. And it's not based on healthy people, by the way. We're still not sure exactly what this is. No testing, no vaccine. I mean, there's testing, but it's not widespread. It's not enough. And Gundy's still talking about 3 weeks from now that he wants people back. Because what he's doing is he's basing it on want. Hey, what an easy way to live life. I only gauge everything I do based on what I want. You want to talk about narcissistic or entitled? I think you got the poster guy there. And, you know, kind of what we've seen in the past week. I think those comments are irresponsible. I think we've had some irresponsible comments for Dabo with Clemson. Like I said, they're acting like they're thinking of the greater good, but coincidentally, their words match exactly what would be best for them. And there's nothing wrong with optimism. Nobody's saying that. But making blanket statements etched in anything beyond facts, science, and experts, and those with substantial qualifications, seems dangerous at a time like this. You know, Gundy saying young, healthy people are best suited to fight off the virus, and, you know, compared it to the flu, it's not. Talking about antibodies, setting dates, and I'll tell you what. If you disagree with me, why did the university itself, Oklahoma State, I was going to call him Oklahoma City. God, Nick, you're bad news. You issued a statement in the aftermath.
But the thing is Oklahoma is a state, Steve.
I know, but I didn't do it for a joke. You now have me trained like Pavlov's dogs. Thanks.
You're welcome.
So, you know, the school basically shot him down without shooting him down. They didn't mention him, but provided the only sensible commentary: we will adhere to the advice of public health experts who are making informed decisions. And then today, hooray, a breath of logic and actual leadership from the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, who, when asked when the games will start up again, said, "The answer, see Dr. Fauci. We will not determine the timeline. The virus will." It is that simple. All right. I guess if you wanted to get a quick phone call in, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. When we were talking about rule changes that impacted the game, somebody texted Jackie Robinson. And my first thought was, well, but then, And it's like they did change the rule in 1947 to allow people of color to integrate the game. And I don't think that anything bigger than that has happened in the game of baseball, to actually allow all of the best players, not the ones with the skin pigmentation that the owners back then thought. So, yeah, I see you guys always pound for pound. We got the sharpest audience of any sports radio program in the country. I believe that. So looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour, I saw an interesting thing about Tom Brady and their new Buck uniforms. And and this is something I never do because I basically don't care. The top selling uniforms in the NFL. So what I did is, so I'm about to go. I see who's number one, and then I do that. I hit my eyes and switched my screen because I wanted to see if I can guess who the top 10 were. I'll tell you what, I did pretty well, considering I don't even consider it. There's an element of intrigue to who was on the list. And I think it's kind of telling, and it's not necessarily just the greatest players, but guys who attract attention, team you're with, market you work in, absolutely came into play. So we'll get to that. And somebody chimed in about our conversation yesterday about the better career, Tim Duncan versus Kobe. I thought that was kind of interesting. And like I said, I've actually put a lot of work in today. I got some stuff that I think you guys will enjoy. So, and again, thanks to Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network for joining us. That was a real fun chat, always informative and classy with Mike. But now we'll take a break. We'll be back. The 5 o'clock hour sports talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?